And this time on our show, we have comic book artist Dave Beatty. Welcome to the show. And we have Russ Emanuel as well. So,
hey.
So now this is a blast from the past.
Yeah.
Well, I am, but not Dave.
Yeah.
Welcome no, but we've talked to Dave plenty of times outside of the studio, so yeah. It's nice to finally have you here.
Yeah. Welcome, Dave.
It's nice to be here.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah. You're a comic book artist, and you've been brought in on the comic book tie-in for Occupants, the movie. So give us a little history of how you kind of came about being a comic book artist and who you worked for and what happened that spurred this
project. How did you get on the hook?
How did you get on the hook for Occupants?
How did Russ hook you into this?
I've been a professional comic artist now for going on about 25 years. The majority of my work is self-published independent titles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a huge bulk of my work. Titles like in the 90s, Star Gods, which was like a CGI digitally painted hybrid title, which is a science fiction series.
Interesting.
Which for people that are into that, the characters talk with Shakespearean dialogue. It's actually kind of a neat series. Over the years, eventually I started doing background artwork for Marvel Comics for a bunch of artists that lived in the area where I was. So I did backgrounds for titles like Guardians of the Galaxy and Alpha Flight.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually on Alpha Flight for a year. That was the Steve Siegel series, and That's actually where I met Scott Clark. Scott and I got to be good friends, and over the course of our friendship, we worked on like more titles than I could even begin to list. But during my association with Scott, I worked for every major comic book publisher in the U.S.
Wow. So you honed your craft doing that.
Yes. And during that same time, because I used to say artist by night, because I did a lot of that work at night, and I still maintained a day job where I was either doing illustration or graphic design at the same time. So while we would be working on, for example, X-Men sort of the Braddocks at night, during the day, I was actually doing editorial cartoons, and I was drawing a weekly comic strip called Captain Value, which is like a weird, you know, you see the Hostess cupcake ads in the comic books.
Right.
This is the same thing, but it instilled the kind of the values to the community of your community newspaper and the value of classified advertising and that kind of rigmarole.
I haven't seen some of that in a long time.
Yeah, and it was a fairly popular feature for a lot of the newspapers that it ran in. And it actually won an Arizona Newspapers Association award at one time.
Oh, far out.
Yeah. And so, but during the course of that time, I've worked for Marvel Comics, DC Comics, Aspen, Dabu Brothers.
Wow.
I mean, you name them, I've probably worked for them.
Doing background work? Like
main art.
Ooh, interesting.
So primarily as an inker, but I've also worked as a colorist. I've done some penciling work. So because Scott came from the Homage Studios group, like Jim Lee's group, and a lot of the way the artists were trained, you came in and you started out doing backgrounds, and eventually you learned to mimic a little bit the style of the artist that you were working with, so that when things got tough, you could pinch in order to get pages out.
Oh, cool.
So I can do a pretty decent Scott Clark imitation when I need to. And for example, on Cry for Justice, Justice League Cry for Justice, the James Robinson series, at one point, I was actually drawing a lot of the figures on that series, and nobody even knows. So it's one of those things. The idea was to form a partnership with Scott, and I might get a bit emotional here in a minute because he passed away a couple of years ago. The idea was to form kind of a partnership so that it's like at any time that one of us was, and this will sound kind of weirdly metaphorical, but one of us is weak, the other one could be strong.
Uh-huh.
And we could always get projects out. And we could take on more and more work and do better things. It worked really, really well for a lot of years. He started getting sick. I didn't realize just how sick he was getting. And then it seemed like within a matter of years, he was like not bedridden, but more ill than he was letting on.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
And then he passed rather suddenly, shocked pretty much everyone, you know, myself, I was devastated. And at that same time, my contract for DC Comics had kind of lapsed. And we were in the process of kind of rebuilding our kind of our standing with DC because we'd had some issues with some shipping problems. And so when he passed, because the contract was in lapse, DC decided not to renew that contract.
Oh, wow.
So at that time, I had been working for DC full time. Like, that was all I was doing. So it was like, okay, well, it's back in, you know, just like being an actor, it's time to go get that waiter job. You know,
right.
So I went right back in to doing graphic design and illustration again. And it was during this period, I have a creator-owned series, a web series I do with a writer named Al Sparrow called Red Skirts.
Right.
And I was working.
Which is fabulous.
We love it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Red Skirts is very much a labor of love. It's so much fun to work on that series, and it's so much fun to talk to people who love it as much as Al and I do.
Right.
And I get to do all these fun things like I draw my dogs into it, but I will draw my friends' dogs into it. So when you see all the dogs,
dogs
and the cats,
with cameos.
Yeah, when you see them running around like in uniforms, like performing functions, that's either, you know, that's someone's pet.
Right.
And it's because we had a conversation. I was like, your dog is so cool. And then they wind up in Red Skirts next week. But no, it's been a real labor of love. And as I was working on that, I've been friends with Eric Alexander for a very, very long time, who's the editor on Occupants. We met through the Fans Comic Con circuit. And we have always talked about doing a project together. Like, there's been always that.
Oh, yeah, we should do something.
We should
someday.
Do something.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. We should. And so we were having a discussion about Red Skirts one night. And he's like, you know, we've got this cool project we're working on. And he started describing it to me. He's like, do you think it would be something you would be interested in? And I haven't done anything. You know, Red Skirts is a labor of love. And a lot of people, you know, really enjoy it. But it's not like a mainstream, you know, thing
right
now. You know, it's kind of a fun underground kind of title.
Right.
And I thought, would it be interesting?
Thing.
Yeah. And I thought it'd be interesting to do something that's a little bit more standard, mainstream. And I've never done anything that's a thriller.
Right.
You know, like that's, you know, doesn't involve a lot of guns and superpowers. So,
right.
Or martial arts. So, he started talking about this project and it sounded interesting. And I said, well, yeah, let's look at it. And, we kind of came to an agreement about it, and he put me in touch with Russell, and that's how I came on board with Occupants.
So, wow.
Yeah, this one was, what, November 2015, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So it's been fairly recent then.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
When was the Comic Book Expo where we met you?
Oh,
That was April.
Was that April?
April? Yeah,
April.
April.
Oh, yeah. We were at... I guess we were at the same event, but different times.
Ours
was like October 25th.
We met at the Cottonwood.
Yeah, we all met at the Cottonwood Expo in April. Yeah,
right, right. Yeah, that's when we saw the videos.
Right,
and
right, right.
The testimony.
We got in touch
and
with. We were talking
to
Eric.
Oh,
and that's
when
we met Eric.
Yeah. That was in April.
Yeah, that was April 25th. We met Eric and we met Dave and. They were giving this little panel, and Keith and I thought that was just—it was the idea of a movie and a comic book tie-in that really got our attention.
Yeah,
and that's when we decided to pursue talking to you and learning more about Occupants of the movie.
Right. It was,
and thank you for showing up at Phoenix Comic Con too. I mean,
Of course we're going to show up at Comic Con.
Yeah.
I mean, this is our home.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's in our backyard.
So you said something during the panel that you were kind of challenged to do some really different work than what you've done in the past on this comic book, and so I guess you put some new tool sets in your belt, shall we say. Some new tools in your belt.
Yeah, it's with the way Occupants worked, it was a crowdfunded title, and as a part of the reward program, you could pledge $20 in order to get a cameo.
I wish we'd
and
known about
Russ
that.
Had
yeah,
if
we'd known about it, we would have pledged
Russell,
a long
they
time
closed.
Ago.
They were,
yeah,
Russell's
it was
already closed.
This, when this was before we met.
Right, right.
Yeah.
This was before.
Yeah.
And I yes, it was my fault. I understand that.
No,
I did
no,
not
no.
put
I,
I did
you,
not
you
put
keep,
a limit.
It's one of those things. I tell everyone this story, and then Russell's reaction is like, it's my fault. I'm sorry.
Don't be ashamed. I mean, it's kind of amusing.
So we only drew 90 people into
yeah.
Okay, so it gives you an excuse to do a lot of crowd scenes.
As a part of it, you could basically for $20 you could get drawn into the book in a cameo role,
right?
And you know, typically those roles are like background action kind of characters, like if you're looking at it in terms of film,
right?
And you usually have a lot of bystanders and people standing around. I have never worked on a book. And again, this is not a complaint, Russell. I'm just talking honestly. I have never in my entire career worked on a book that had so many specific people on it. Ever. Wow.
Draw real generic people the time. You could have filled the crowd with generic people.
Because sometimes you've got a crowd scene and someone will draw their friends in there for fun.
Right, right.
You know, but I mean, I don't have one scene like that. I've got multiple scenes like that. And it's
90 people. It's like, yeah, it's an 18 page book.
Yeah. It was a lot of people. But the thing that's also the flip side of that I've learned to appreciate too is those people that paid that $20 that got drawn into that book, like that book's important to them.
Exactly.
You know, and I've talked to a few people this today, and what I was most shocked at is that, you know, they're talking about this Occupants book with the reverence that people talk about, like Frank Miller's Daredevil, know, and it's like, in my mind, I'm like, no, it's not the same thing. But, you know, to them, they're in the book.
Exactly.
They're a part of the book.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's like,
so it's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that kind of connection that sometimes takes years and years and years in order to develop. And these people already have a love and a familiarity with it. And that's special.
Right. And if they're comic book fans, and to be in a comic book, that is like, I would think
that's like for a Star Trek fan to actually have a background scene. You're exactly. just walking down the hall, right. That kind of thing.
Right.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you this. Some people are like, can you take my character into comic book and put us into the sequel?
Oh, wow.
Are they asking that now?
They are.
Oh, dear.
They are actually.
Wow. Okay. That's an additional pledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
That's going to be a little bit more.
But not only do I want a film sequel, I want a comic book sequel.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
I, it could be a huge franchise. I see.
You know, there's a potential, and right now we're riding the momentum. So
yeah. Exactly.
Now, let me ask: has your technique in how you draw, has that changed? Did it evolve? Did you have to take on new styles in illustrating in an attempt when working on this? I mean, did you find there was any change in how you actually drew this from before?
Right. To bring a long story short, I mean, yeah, my style has been evolving for quite some time. It's one of those weird things. I always bring things back to Scott, and he was so important in my life. And it's one of those things I'm still coming to grips with how important he was in my life. And, when we worked together, we had a specific way that we did things. And I have found over the last few years, I want to do things differently. And it's not because what we were doing was wrong. It's just in a weird way, like I need to kind of move away from that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So my style has changed and it is evolving. And I'm finding that, my style is kind of more open to an extent. And that I'm hoping people can see that, even though it's your likeness, you know, if you're in the book, it should hopefully look like you. But at the same point, I'm hoping it's open enough that people can see themselves in the characters at the same time.
Right.
And that's kind of more, again, that's kind of like a manga kind of approach. And that, again, came out of the discussions with Occupants, because one of the things that Eric and Alexander and I had a discussion about was, you know, he wanted to evolve the style. And he wanted something. Robotech was the thing that we kept circling. Right. Was Robotech, and then
we did a whole, long story. But we told you about the Robotech saga.
We don't need to revisit that.
Yeah, no. But when I was talking to Russell, when Russell and I started talking, and Russell is a fan of film noir, and he wanted, you know, big black shadows and drama and tension and all those things that a thriller really needs. And that made me think of Mike Mignola, who does Hellboy.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea with this book, and I don't think I was successful in this, but the idea was to take elements of manga, i.e. things you would have seen in Robotech in terms of the characters, and then turn around and marry it with like the shadows and the drama and the noir kind of feel that you would get from something like Hellboy.
Right.
But at the same point have it be its own kind of unique thing. And it doesn't really look like anything I've ever drawn before. It looks like its own
Right. Yeah, it's its own thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
based on what we've seen.
Yeah, we've only seen just a few panels already, and it doesn't look like anything that I've ever seen before.
Yeah, and then having seen some of your work up at Cottonwood, because we went over to the winery and saw your stuff and what you drew for us. I mean, the things that you can just pull out of your head to draw, and then to see this is completely different than what you have done in the past.
Right.
And I think it's great. I think it's great.
When you work for one of the companies like DC or Marvel, you know, they kind of have house styles.
Right.
And they're either spoken rules or unspoken rule. Like right now.
God forbid that you should break any of them.
Yeah. and I know some of my colleagues might take me to task for this, but for a while there, it seemed like there was an unspoken rule that at DC it was Jim Lee. Like the idea was to get close to Jim Lee, that should be the house style. Like before, the house style used to be Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, who's one of my heroes. But Garcia Lopez is the guy, when you see the retro style Batman and Superman t-shirt art, or you see it on a lunchbox or whatever, that's Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. And so that was always that clearly identified style. And when you look at a lot of the books that came out of that period, everyone's doing their version of Garcia Lopez. And right now you have a lot of everyone doing their version of Jim Lee.
Right.
You know, they're either getting closer to it or they're falling short. So to do something like this, where it was like the idea was like, well, just do something different. And I had already been moving in a really radical direction with Red Skirts, because Red Skirts is very much an animated cartoon. That's what Red Skirts is supposed to be.
Yeah, it's great.
It's supposed to be a feel good Saturday morning, good time, you know. And the thing that's interesting about Occupants is in a weird way, Occupants benefits from that I was so far away from that other style.
Right.
It's like
you could pick up something new.
Well, yeah, right. But I think by doing something like Red Skirts, it's you're loosening yourself of the chains that kind of artistic bondage that DC kind of enforced on you.
Well, they didn't really enforce it. It's like I said, it's an unspoken rule.
Right.
You know, it's like if that's what the company's buying, then that's what you better be selling. You know, it's a it's kind of the
because if you're not drawing it, they're not buying it.
I have a friend who tells a story who's one of my mentors. I would name him if I didn't think he'd get mad at me, but he told me a story once upon a time that he had these amazing sample pages, and he would go out and he would meet with the editors, you know, back during the 90s, and he would show them these amazing pages, and they'd be like, yeah, this is great, yeah, whatever. Everybody loves Gene Colan, but everybody wants Rob Liefeld. You know, or everyone wants Todd McFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
And so out of spite, he went back and drew pages trying to be them. Not really to prove a point he could break in, but to prove a point that's like, this is, you know, silly. And it went in and he went, oh, this is great. And he got a gig.
And it was the same story with different character.
And that's the thing. If people want apple pie, you know, if you want to pay the mortgage, you serve apple pie.
Well, I understand that because I'm 55 years old. And when I kind of got into the whole DC Comics thing, I mean, at that time, like the artist du jour was Mike Grell, you know, and then later, you know, when I was in college,
still amazing.
Yeah, I love my girl. You know that, but when I was in college, it was Keith Giffen.
Right.
So there's these artists that kind of typify a certain era, and it's like, oh, you have to draw like this person. You have to be like Keith. You got to be like Mike Grell. You know, and I can sort of get that, but at the same time, you know, variety is the spice of life.
Yeah. But well, I guess it's what people are buying. What the studio is buying and what they're peddling. Yeah.
I wanted parallel apple pie.
Right.
And
there you go.
You gave it to me, and I'm very, very happy with what you did.
Well, thanks.
You got strawberry on one side and rhubarb on the other.
Exactly. A mix. Exactly.
Very, very true.
So here we are at Phoenix Comic Con Fan Fest. And of course, today was the big finishing off. The comic book tie-in, it is now done. We were in the room with you when it was finally done. How is that feeling?
You know, it's one of those things, I'm going to say relief.
Yeah.
There was a couple of times where I was, because again, I'm still maintaining a day job at the same time.
Right. So,
you know,
not unlike the old days.
I could create the illusion, you know, that whatever, but... So it's been difficult. I find it incredibly rewarding too. So it's not, there's not a lot of negative coming out of it. There's a lot of gratitude. I'm very grateful for the opportunity. Russell's been a tremendously incredible collaborative partner on this, allowing me to have leeway sometimes where it helps me to get something done, but at the same point too, allowing me to kind of interject a little bit of kind of my personality here and there.
Okay.
But at the same point, making sure that we're on target, you know, that it fits within the occupants universe.
Right.
And been incredibly gracious and incredibly understanding. But it is a tremendous sense of relief, because there was a couple of days there where, you know, it's like 2 or 3 in the morning and, you know, I've got to, you know, I'm going to get 3 hours of sleep and I got to get to work, you know, and it's, it can be hard. And that's the part of the independent comic book publishing part of the industry that I think sometimes that's where people sometimes kind of not really lose their dedication or discipline, but that's the part that breaks you down.
Right.
You know, and you can look at it one of two things. You can look at it as a forge and it's going to make you stronger, or it'll break you.
Right. Well, I think that's pretty much it is with anybody that's of an independent creation nature, whether it's a comic book artist or a filmmaker, because, you know, or a couple of podcast people, because we've got full-time jobs.
We just hit 100 episodes, and
congratulations.
The last couple of weeks, we've been kind of saying, oh, my Lord, you know, it's almost becoming a grind, and it's a chore, but it's things like this and talking to people that are excited about what they do that makes us excited, because then we break out and say, wow, we've really talked to people that are excited about what they're doing.
Right.
And just to echo something in reference to podcasting, we have some amazing creators that are still with us that are aging.
Right.
And then we're losing incredible creators like at a scary rate. And you know, like just I think it was today or yesterday, Steve Dillon passed away.
Yes, I just read that this morning.
He was only 54.
54, right. Yeah.
54. Right. And we have one of my things I love to listen to when I work late at night is podcasts. It's one of my things I love to listen to. And I have this one podcast, I cannot remember the name of the show, but they actually filmed a live in-room conversation. And one of the people there was Dick Giordano, which, you know, of course, was a longtime Batman editor, DC editor. I think at one time he was publisher. He was kind of the man behind, you know, Watchmen to an extent, Dark Knight Returns. Like, a lot of these things were under his watch.
Right.
But he also had tremendous runs as an inker, working with Neil Adams on, you know, Green Lantern and Green Arrow.
That's how I'm familiar with him.
Heroes. Tremendous artist, but in terms of a creative professional, because at one time I think he was editor or publisher over at Charlton. So we're also talking about this man's responsible for Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, Sarge Steel, you know, and such an amazing legacy. The only people who cared enough to talk to Dick Giordano and record his thoughts, you know, about those days were when they would record those panels.
Right.
And I have this one that to me it's almost like gold, and I love to listen to it over and over again. He's telling the stories about those days.
Oh, wow.
When he's talking to Alan Moore.
Right.
And he's like, well, you know, we just got the rights to the Charlton characters back, and I kind of don't want to do this. You know, but if you turn them into your own, it could be something else. You know, and then Watchmen comes out of that.
Uh-huh.
Right. And I know Alan Moore's upset that DC didn't do him right in the contract, and I don't want to get into that. But the thing that is really cool is that a podcaster recorded Dick Giordano's thoughts. And as far as I know, that's the only verbal history we have of Dick Giordano talking about his perspective on his career.
Right, right.
And that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it performs a very important function when you're talking in terms of history and perspective, specifically in this particular genre.
Right.
So,
because I think this is a new thing for this genre, and where those artists, they weren't on radio shows, they weren't on TV shows, they weren't on anything else. But the podcasters that are genre podcasters have picked this up. I mean, we've talked to Brian Augustin a number of times, but we haven't had him on the show.
We're still working on that.
We're still, you know, he said, oh, yeah, I guess I'll call anytime, you know. It's like, it just hasn't worked.
And that's another one of those people that's one of those elder statesman creators.
Right, right.
And to be able to have a hand and along these same lines, and this is something unusual I learned recently. I was reading a collection of Buck Roger comic strips, like the newspaper strips from the 1930s to the 1940s.
That's old stuff.
Yeah, and yeah,
but classic.
I love Golden Age stuff. And in the beginning of it, they have this retrospective, and they talk about the art of Buck Rogers and the artists that worked on it. And one of the artists they talk about is an artist by the name of Dick Calkins. And eventually what happened was, is when he left Buck Rogers, he drew it for a very long time. When he left it, he bought a ranch in Tucson and basically went out and was running this ranch. And I had always heard these stories about Dick Sprang having at one time lived in Tucson. And I'm going to be doing the Tucson Comic Con coming up. And I thought, I love to have factoids when I'm talking to people and be like, you know, Dick Sprang used to live in Tucson. Like, it's like a fun little thing to throw to people that are from the area they may not be familiar with. And I thought, well, let me pull up his obituary and read his obituary and see what it says about him and maybe where he was at the time that he passed. I was shocked to discover that when Dick Sprang passed away, he was in Prescott. Now, I live in Prescott, Valley, Arizona. I've never heard any, and this is the scary thing. I've heard so many people over the years when I talk to them, they talk about this Batman artist that lived in Prescott. Now, Brett Blevins, a fantastic artist and comic artist and as well as storyboard artist, worked on Batman the Animated Series. So when people said this, I assume they're talking about Brett. Like, I just assume that's who they're talking about. Now I'm beginning to realize, holy cow, they might have been talking about Dick Sprang. And as I dug further into his history, not only was he in the area, he lived in Sedona for a little while. And he actually developed an affinity for hiking Western trails. He became an aficionado and a bit of a historian. There's actually apparently like tapes that are the oral history of the area. And he was actually, I guess, had a hand in actually helping to discover part of the Anasazi ruins.
Really?
Like, So
that's not just a comic book artist.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's an archaeologist.
He's part comic book artist, part Indiana Jones.
And that was like an amazing thing to learn, you know. And that's why I love podcasts and podcasting and people who do what you do, because it performs a very necessary function. It preserves aspects of history. I'm thinking preserves. Yeah, excuse me. I have had a little bit to drink.
That's okay.
Because
you've earned it.
I'm finally like able to relax.
I'm free.
But I find it to be important.
Yeah.
Just for me personally. Well,
it's amazing. That's why we allow people to go. We let the conversation go wherever it goes, because I can't tell you how many crazy stories we have heard from people. We just talked to a guy recently whose grandfather had been in the film business forever. And his grandfather was the guy that
Gene Kelly
handed the umbrella to at the end of Singing in the Rain.
That came out of his interview.
And it's okay.
I didn't know that.
That is the most
Well, cool. And it's far out to know. I mean, especially here in Arizona. I mean, the Anasazi Indians. I mean, that's such an important historical aspect to the state. And to know that Dick Sprang had something to do with the finding of those ruins.
It's amazing, because it's like now there's this whole extra dimension to the man. Because I have so much respect, because when people think of that definitive version of Batman, when we're talking about the Golden Age, you know, without the yellow oval behind the bat, I mean, that's Dick Sprang. And a lot of times, even when people aren't meaning to, that's what they're trying to draw. I saw actually something posted the other day on Facebook, and it was like this evolution of comic book art. And it had the different divisions between the responsibilities, you know, the editor, the penciler.
Yeah.
If you notice, they're doing it's Bob Kane to an extent, but it's very heavily influenced by Dick Sprang.
Wow.
And that's the thing that's so amazing is the legacy. The comics legacy, he's got that. And I'm like, he's got this whole other legacy? And that was the thing I was most amazed at. But it's like, wow. So it's like, so if I could somehow find this, I could actually hear him talk. Like, if I could somehow find these tapes and listen to them, I could hear what he actually sounded like, you know? And so I just find that these kind of podcasting and these kind of things, they're preserving aspects of kind of our culture and our history that is
that's missing.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard many months ago, I was in Fort Worth, and I think it was, I tend to listen, if I don't get Sirius in the car, I tend to listen to the NPR station. And there was an interview with Stan Lee, and he was telling some stories that I had never heard before. And it was like, wow, it's incredible. You know, I mean, the stories that he has to tell, as well as all these other people. And I thought, that is really amazing to hear these people that have been in the business that you know nothing about.
Yeah, right? And business has not been exactly fair for the aging artists either. No. I mean, they've gotten some really bad deals, and they tend to be forgotten.
Yep.
Because, no, I mean, it's not like a movie star where, you know, everybody wants to get that interview. They want to have that little statement that you know, they can flash on to, you know, whatever news article or on TV Guide or whatever. So to be able to sit down and talk to these people now and record the voices, record their thoughts, record their memories, I think really is, there's just so much to be learned and so much to be appreciated by, you know, with you and, like, you know, Stan Lee or the Mike Grell or Steve Dillon, you know, all these, what these people have done for the business. Because it's, you know, I remember growing up, you know, I wanted to get a Superman comic. You know, my parents, that's for kids. You know, you don't realize this is a legitimate art form.
Right.
And, you know, and it's mm-hmm. almost like what we see here is like the present day American version of what, like, maybe the Greek mythology was, you know, like what Homer was writing or anything like that.
Oh, I like that comparison.
Well, and I think it's very important that comic books have become a thing again, and they've become respected, and thus artists like you, and then you could do this tie-in with this fabulous film.
I think that says a lot about what people think about the form itself now.
Exactly.
That this whole transmedia idea, I mean, I think this is something that we're going to be seeing a lot of in the future. I mean, transmedia, that's been going on a little bit now for a few years, you know, in some form or another, music bands working with authors, things like that. But, you know, now we've got this going on, and I've seen it in Star Trek as well. So I think we're seeing something that could really blow up into something just unbelievably massive.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, as the filmmaker, I think it's very fascinating, you know, building a franchise.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you're continuing. Dave here has continued the story of Occupants.
Right.
And expanded the universe. And it brought
more. Exactly. We did. Because you wrote it. There's some we in there.
This is a collaborative effort.
It is a collaborative, yes.
But you were the artist behind.
Well, you know, in a way, now,
behind the story.
The way it works, the way I understand it, is like, okay, so you wrote the story?
I wrote the comic book, yes, because I knew the film.
Okay, right.
So I knew I did not want to give away the film, but I also wanted to tell something new. So I did that, I think, out of necessity. But you're the artist. I'm just a writer.
But you directed him, didn't you?
I guess you could put it that way.
So
yes.
In a sense, in a really, really weird way, you were director of the comic book and
Dave, the film.
You were the cinematographer and the actor.
There you go.
You have to make all these people come to life off the page.
And exactly. that's a pretty good example, because there were several instances where I would approach Russell with something. I'd send him a message and I'd be like, that scene with Lee Mitchell, for example, you've been having a lot of fun with him all day today about. You know, that whole scene, because in the book, it's like there's an explosion. I'm not going to give everything away. There's an explosion, and his character may or may not have perished, you know. But then there's another character who we're following who we eventually learn, you know, maybe didn't perish. But what I did is I decided, because in comics, it's always better to show than tell. And in a book where people are talking so much, you know, you want to give them something to be hopefully kind of doing. So I decided to have Lee rush at this particular character and knock her out of the way. Mm-hmm. So in a weird way, it attributes to him like heroic motivation. Right. You know, like he's doing something heroic. He's helping to save her character. But at the same point, all I'm thinking of is like, okay, it's more dynamic that way.
Right.
But in a very real way, it does. It's like an actor's motivation. Wouldn't mm-hmm. I try to save her life in this instance?
Right.
Unless
right.
I'm in a person of, you
cowardice?
Know.
Cowardice?
Yeah. And so, and then it's up to Russell to say, no, your character is a person of cowardice. You would not do that. You would, you know, you would leave her to her own devices, you know, or he'd be like, you know, that's an interesting idea. Yeah, I could see your character, you know, doing something heroic. Yeah, why don't you do that? And then in a way, when I'm sending him this text message saying, hey, what if this? And Russell goes, yeah, that'd be cool. You know, and then you turn around, you put it in the book, and it does. It's giving actors motivation, you know, to that character.
And it made him a hero. I loved it. I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it, you know, and it was Dave here who had the idea.
Well, as I said, it's kind of, I heard through the panel today that this was a huge collaboration between you, Russell, and Dave, and Al, and Eric, and several other people. That,
well,
you know,
I would love to name them. Chris Winters.
Right,
plays,
exactly.
Alan
exactly.
Peterson Jr. and Timothy Lee Conley.
Yeah.
And Nicole Morris.
Right, and you had all of that input where, you know, most of the time a comic book is, you know, one or two people.
Well, it's like, you know, Red Skirts is me and Al.
Right.
You know, and... But, you know, and then when you're at DC, like when I was working at DC or I was working at Marvel, I mean, you've got the script and your goal is to not deviate from the script at any time.
Right.
So if something is vague, you know, 9 times out of 10, you leave it vague, you know. But I was pretty invested in this project. I wanted it to, you know, be successful.
Right.
So it's like where if I saw areas where it's like, you know, this character's motivation seems unclear
in the industry.
And they've been standing around. Let's have this person do something, you know, and
that's my
initial thought is just let's just have this person do something to make it more dynamic because they've been standing around talking.
This is very much like an established actor, you know, a very seasoned actor, say like a Jack Nicholson who, you know, you put him in with a movie and it's like, you know, really, it would be interesting if the character did this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, Dave, Don't take up too much of your time because there's a party that's going on next door. You know, everybody's here in honor of you and in honor of occupants of the movie. So to close things up, let me just ask, is there any presence on social media? Do you have a website? If anybody wants to learn more about you, what you're working on, either with occupants of the movie or independently, how can they do that?
I'm on Twitter at Dave B. Comics, I believe. And this is the part where I always kind of draw a blank. I think I'm on Twitter at Dave B. Cartoonist. Because I always jostle back and forth between calling myself a comic book artist, an illustrator, or a cartoonist. Because there's a weird thing where it's like, you know, technically it all is all a form of cartooning. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, depending on who you're talking to, you say the wrong term and they go, You know, it's kind of like a considered lesser.
Which is really just ridiculous.
Right.
Because
so,
I have nothing but the highest respect for anybody who works in the industry.
Yeah. So, but I believe that on Twitter, I'm Dave B. Cartoonist. And then I am on Facebook. You know, you just do a search for Dave Beatty.
Mm-hmm.
My little icon, little character, avatar thing or whatever, you know, it you could probably tell it's me because it's either a combo character, you know, or whatever. But yeah, Facebook, I'm pretty active on Facebook. So any one of those places. So yeah. And then as I'm working on projects like Occupants or Red Skirts or whatever, you know, I'm always trying to post about it so people know. So yeah.
Very nice. Wow.
And thank you for having me on the show. This is really
cool.
It
was a pleasure. I mean, you shared some really great information with us. It was wonderful to listen to you talk.
And thanks for having Russell here.
Well,
Russ,
tell us
more about Occupants, where it can be found.
Well, first, I'm just happy Dave was finally able to come on to the
program. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, podcasting really has helped Occupants, you know, in its infancy.
Yeah.
You came on to us and I was very grateful. So
we should probably
be a part of it.
Yeah, we should probably also ask the question for anybody who wants to read the comic book tie-in, when will that be available and how can they get it?
Yes.
In a couple weeks we'll be printing the first run and we are talking I think through Amazon if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Is where
cool. Let us know
available.
And
we'll let you know right now. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll be happy to
we'll put a
announce
widget
that.
On the website.
Yeah. But also go to occupantsthemovie.com. That's occupants plural themovie.com and you will see the comic book information on there as well as the film.
Great.
Excellent. Super. Thank you Dave and Russ
Thank
for
you.
Being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.